For the best liberty-oriented talk 24/7, visit LRN.fm.
And so it is, the recorder of man's deeds, the keeper of his conscience, the courier of his news, that we look for strength and assistance, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
In your heart, you know he's right.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
This is Liberty in Exile with your host, Yael Osofsky.
Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. I come to bring you liberty, not destroy it. The evil the government's duel is after them, the good is often turned with their bones, so let it be with liberty in exile. Hello and welcome to the program. Let us begin. And as always, I am your host, Yael Osofsky, broadcasting today from the Sovereign Southern Studio on the Liberty Radio Network and on the No Agenda stream on this, the 18th day of January, 2012. Our website, as always, is libertyinexile.com. That is libertyinexile.com. There we have the articles, the feeds, and more. And we also do run antiimperialism.org for more info. So if you're hearing my voice now and you've been on the internet at any time today or in the past few, you've probably heard about this blackout, and it is an amazing, amazing display of peaceful coordination and determination. You have the people all surrounded around the idea that they do not deserve to have an internet that is regulated, not to have an internet that is somehow construed or manipulated by government power. That is what we're seeing in protest to the PIPA, Protect the Internet Privacy Act, whatever it may be, and the Stop Online Privacy Act. These are both bills that are in, respectively, the House and the Senate of the United States Congress. And people are opposing them outright. We see that on Wikipedia, totally blacked out. Sites like Reddit, totally blacked out. Google has a nice little black bar, and a lot of people on the Facebooks and the Twitters are spreading the message and changing their profile pictures. And if you haven't really been paying attention to this, it's actually quite simple. I read through the bills, and what we seem to have here is an attempt to use piracy, whatever online piracy may be, and sort of use that as leverage to crack down on wider internet use. Now, in the beginning, it's always the same. It's we're going after the bad guys, that's all that it's for, and, you know, you people out there who aren't doing anything wrong, you're fine. However, if you actually read the bill, it demonstrates exactly how fragile these definitions are. These bills are crafted by the lobbyists. I read an article earlier by Glenn Greenwald there on Salon.com, where he's talking about the main architect of this bill was actually Chris Dodd. Now, if you don't know who Chris Dodd was, he actually used to be a senator, a Democratic senator from the state of Connecticut. He ran for president in 2008, and he vowed in his last interview before he left office that he would never, never become a lobbyist. And then he becomes president of the Motion Picture Association of America and has, as the Washington Post describes, been the chief lobbyist for this legislation. And I'm happy to report that the online efforts of everybody across the country and across the world who have tuned in have basically started the snowfall, started that great big snowfall, that big old snowball that comes down, and the people have changed their minds. There's actually been a few senators and congressmen alike who have changed their vote or have even withdrawn their original sponsorship of the bill. Now, reading through it, it was very interesting. Now, I'm very well versed in law, and being that I've been stopped by the police many times and I've had to go to court plenty, I'll give an update on that as well as a couple other topics later here on the show. But for right now, reading through these things, it's always very tenuous. It takes a lot of time, a lot of energy. You always have to refer to other bills. But reading through, it's very apparent what's going on. It's going after and providing the remedies for government to crack down on internet service providers, on individual websites, the people who register domain names, the people who, just happen to host a website. I mean, this is what they want to try to say is it's about is fake Rolexes. It's about, selling Chinese fake handbags and allowing movies to be downloaded. Perhaps that is their original intention, but as we know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions on all counts, and we know that this is going to be used in order to crack down on broader information on the internet. Most of you would not be listening to this program if it were not for the internet, and most of the alternative information that you get, not from the mainstream media, again, comes from the internet. As soon as we allow the tentacles to reach from Washington or from any regulatory source into that atmosphere, into that world, that is when it shall become a decaying, trembling respect of regulatory matter. We cannot allow that to happen. It is the greatest free market that we have now, that being the internet, and I'm glad to see so many people engaged about it, so many people out, and so many people willing to take the time out of their day to share with others. Now, I'll link to a couple of articles on libertyinexile.com. You can check it out there. I think for now there's sort of, I mean, this is only in the first few hours that we've had reports. Apparently, Marco Rubio has withdrawn his sponsorship as well. I believe that's very important. So we continue to look at that here on Liberty in Exile, and we'll continue as alternative media to dissect the news as it happens. And since we're on the topic of media deception...
Yes, dear Wheeler, you provide the prose poems. I'll provide the war.
By the way, if you don't know that clip, it's actually from the movie Citizen Kane, which chronicles the pseudo-life of William Randolph Hearst, the biggest newspaper publisher there in the late 1800s and early 1900s, who famously quipped, you provide the papers, I'll provide the war, talking about the Spanish-American War, basically the greatest false war that we've had in our history. But again, it was trumped by Iraq in this century, and after that, they were also trumped by World War I, and again, World War II, and the Vietnam War. So any time that the government has taken you to war, it has always been with the help of the press, and this is the media deception segment of the program. And there's a couple things that I have to cover. There's an article that I haven't been able to talk about in a long time, and it has to do with the Iraq War, of course. And I remember a few years ago, I wrote a paper, actually, in university about the role of military analysts and generals in coming on television and sort of spreading the message about the inevitability of conflict in Iraq. And to me at the time, I mean, this is just a student's mind. I'm not very open to the broader channels that I've come to understand and to learn and to be exposed to in the last few years. But even at that time, it was very disturbing to me that there was a public relations program set up by the Pentagon to have exclusive contracts with these networks, the CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, to go on and basically make the case for going to war. And there's an article in the New York Times from back in December about how the Pentagon did its own investigation, apparently, and found that there was no fault in the ties to the Pentagon TV analyst. Just reading from the beginning of the article here, a Pentagon public relations program that sought to transform high-profile military analysts into surrogates and message force multipliers for the Bush administration complied with Defense Department regulations and directives, the Pentagon's inspector general has concluded after a 2-year investigation. Now, and apart from legalese and in plain English, these Pentagon spokesmen were basically propagandists who got on our television, told us that we needed to invade Iraq because Saddam, quote-unquote, had weapons of mass destruction. We know it was all a lie. It was just a war built up by the warmongers, by those who deemed it necessary. and America followed through, and we've seen the consequences of such, all those American caskets coming home. So that's an article that I had to cover that was a couple weeks ago. I found it fitting. Also, there's an article here from Politico about Bradley Manning. Bradley Manning is the soldier who leaked the documents to WikiLeaks, which have provided a lot of information about the robustness of the American empire and the crimes committed abroad in your name, my name, and all Americans' name abroad. There's a little piece here about how apparently the Army did its own review, saying that all the coverage of Bradley Manning has been negative, you know, but it has been balanced and factual. Now, it's very interesting that the Army would go through this sort of thing, but it's attempting to show that they regulate themselves, which, you know, as we know, is all a lie. But, you know, at least they're trying, right? That's one thing to say. There's another article here from TV Newser Media about the debates. Now, earlier on this program, about a couple months ago, I called the debates the greatest show on earth. Because it all is but a show. It is a sham. We know who's going to win. We know where the big money lies. And for most people, it is just a show. It is public relations. It's all about the show. It's all about how many viewers you get. It's nothing else. And this article here talks about how the last debate on Fox News, I believe it was in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, drew 5.48 million viewers. And they're anticipating even more for the CNN debate, which will be tomorrow night, I believe from Spartanburg or, you know, Columbia, one of these cities. And you can tell that this is all just the business. It's all about the business. It's all about the money. And these debates have done absolutely nothing. It's always the same people who watch. It's the political junkies, the Washington types who sit on their laptops and tweet about this or that. And it's always the same thing. So that's an interesting article there. I've linked to it in libertyinexile.com. You can check that out. And to round out our segment, it's time for a little bit of comedy. This is Stephen Colbert, who has taken to the Citizens United ruling, which was handed down by the Supreme Court last year, allowing different types of funding and no restrictions on funding by certain third-party groups to fund election campaign ads. So he started his own little super PAC ads that I believe I have. I'm going to play right here. There's been a lot of discussion about super PACs in the last few weeks of Mitt Romney's super PACs, Newt Gingrich's, Ron Paul has some as well. And they say they're unaccountable. So Stephen Colbert took to the airwaves and made his own very accountable ad about Mitt Romney, the serial killer.
Corporations, America's greatest institution. They built this country one job at a time. Mitt Romney says he's for corporations.
Corporations are people, my friend.
But Mitt Romney has a secret. As head of Bain Capital, he bought companies, carved them up, and got rid of what he couldn't use. If Mitt Romney really believes...
Corporations are people, my friend.
Then Mitt Romney is a serial killer. He's Mitt the Ripper. If you believe corporations are people, do your duty and protect them. On Saturday, January 21st, stop Mitt the Ripper before he kills again. Americans for a Better Tomorrow Tomorrow are responsible for the content of this advertising.
That was John Lithgow, of course, doing the voiceover. That was for Stephen Colbert's Political Action Conference, or Political Action Committee, one of those, the ad that they ran against Mitt Romney saying that he's a serial killer for what he did with Bain Capital. So that was very funny. I had to play that. That was one segment in our media deception. So I think what's next to look at? A couple things we're going to cover throughout the breadth of this show. We're going to, of course, talk about what's going on with Ron Paul, who is the only anti-empire anti-drug war candidate we have in the race now. We're also going to talk about a couple of police abuses, the police state. We're going to talk about Iranian intervention and assassinating nuclear scientist, which is always fun. And always, as always, we'll talk about the EU and the continuing attempt to bring together some sort of fiscal union, even though the people have never voted on it. And we'll talk, of course, about NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, which basically gives the power to the military to indefinitely detain any American citizen who is suspected of associating with any group who may have, at one point, have any hostilities with the United States of America. But I'd like to begin this hour with looking a little bit about, well, let's just say some controversies. The controversy that we're going to cover now has to do with the military and golden showers. For those of you who are not young, that basically means pissing on people. Here's a nice little clip about a couple of Marines who were caught on the YouTubes. The video was put up, and the people are inflamed and angry.
Put up first this video just coming in, a new video that appears to show really disgusting behavior by United States Marines in the presence of dead bodies. A Pentagon official says the pictures turned his stomach. An investigation has now been launched. Our Pentagon correspondent Barbara Starr is joining us with details. What are they saying over there, Barbara? What's going on?
Well, Wolf, this is a 39-second video that began to appear on the internet earlier today for obvious reasons. We are only going to show a blurred still image.
Oh, it's so
bad. This is simply not suitable to be shown.
Oh,
what it does appear to show is four men dressed in Marine Corps combat gear in a war zone urinating on what appears to be three dead bodies of potential insurgents. The Marine Corps has launched an investigation.
Okay. Before I let Barbara Starr continue. For those of you who don't watch CNN day in and day out as I do, as I attempt to do to analyze the media, we know that this woman is what they call a Pentagon correspondent. So her entire job is going to the military and writing down everything that they say. She is nothing but a spokeshole, but a blabbermouth. Everything that she say has been, you know, taken through the hand wringer of public relations and every study of how to manipulate information. So I never believe anything that Barbara Starr says. And you can tell that even in this report, she's trying to talk about it, but she's using all of these little key words, allegedly, perhaps, we don't know, seems to show. I mean, it's pretty evident if you watch the video that these guys are pissing on dead bodies. I mean, you kind of wonder why people, you know, try to mount terrorist attacks against the United States. It's pretty evident. We're kind of pissing on people. And they say, oh, well, they're dead Taliban. You know, you had even the most progressive of progressives, Bill Maher, the comedian, come on television and say, well, if they were actually Taliban and they were pissing on them, I think it's okay. But, you know, what do we ever know about that? I mean, you always hear this term insurgents, or they say they're the Taliban. Even in the debate this week, Mitt Romney said that our goal in Afghanistan is to kill the Taliban. I mean, to anybody who is well-versed in history, this is a complete joke, and it's hilarious, and we're laughing it on the couch. The Taliban was the friend of the United States for many years, fighting the Soviets. We gave them aid until the year 2001. They visited Texas. They got a tour of the Texas oil facilities by George W. Bush. I mean, the people who operate in the United States of Amnesia, these are the people who are leading us off a cliff. So let's finish the rest of the report. Barbara Starr, CNN, Pentagon correspondent.
Into all of this, we have to emphasize, as you continue to look at this photo, we do not know when or where exactly it was taken, but there are some interesting clues already emerging. I just spoke to a senior Marine Corps official
says,
look at the picture. You will see that these people dressed in the Marine Corps combat gear are carrying 30 caliber sniper rifles, that especially the Marine dressed person closest to you is wearing a helmet very particular to Marine Corps sniper teams. So they are going to start looking and seeing if anything matches a potential unit that served potentially in Afghanistan, that they might be able to determine who this was and who, and what they exactly were doing here. By all accounts, if they believe this video is legitimate, They do not believe it's a fake, and this is very serious, Wolf. This is U.S. military potentially desecrating dead bodies.
Wolf. This is the U.S. military potentially pissing on dead bodies. I love to hear her voice because she sounds almost devastated. She's so sad. I mean, this is a woman who spends her days and nights in the Pentagon. Imagine the number of times she's had to stay by late at night and listen to the generals blather on and tell her these falsehoods, and she's been completely brainwashed and written them down and reported on them, and now she has to see U.S. military kill people and then piss on them. Now, the whole fact is, this whole thing is nothing but a distraction. The whole point is, this is a story that is popular for the wrong reasons. Yes, it shows U.S. military men pissing on dead Afghans. But where are the pictures of the dead Afghans that are killed every day by American drone strikes, American assault weapons? I mean, there are so many attacks that happen day in and day out of quote-unquote insurgents who are being killed. And we don't ever see this. Nobody's ever outraged. Nobody's ever pissed. Take that literally. But, I mean, where are those? Where are the people getting upset about the continued killing and bombing of hundreds of millions of these people across the Middle East? You never hear that reported, do you? No, you have people in this country, these clowns like Rick Perry, who go on and try to defend these guys, saying, oh, it's the heat of combat, you don't know what's going on. I do know. These are people pissing on guys that they killed. Not only have they taken them off of this earth, but they have also pissed on their bodies. Now, are these the guys who planned 9/11? Not a chance in hell. Not a chance at all. These are nothing but guys who are trying to defend their territory against American aggressors. I think most people would, in any casual circumstance, recognize that quite easily. And in staying on the subject of the military, talking about things about that nature, I guess it's time to talk about the American Empire once more. Terrorist, your game is through, 'cause now you have to answer to America. Fuck yeah! Well, the sabers are rattling, ladies and gentlemen. It's time to go to war once more. It is that great game where basically we go to war every 4 years for oil. We kill a lot of brown people. We come home, declare victory, try to win elections, and then we forget all about it, and we do it again in another 4 years. Welcome to this round. It is Iran. That is our latest subject. Now, if you go to libertyinexile.com, you'll see all the articles that I've put in the notes here about, well, the coming Iranian war. It's not really certain when it'll happen, but as I covered in the last program, there is still a pipeline that needs to be built from the United Arab Emirates up to Saudi Arabia to get it up to Eastern Europe, so probably not going to happen until that is finished, but we had an amazing event this past week. We had a nuclear scientist assassinated in the streets of Tehran, apparently by a couple of people who put a magnetic bomb on his bike, most obviously Mossad. There's actually an article here from the Sunday Times in the UK saying that Mossad agents were behind the entire assassination, meaning that Israel has a direct hand in killing these people, and the U.S., by giving Israel $60 billion a year in military aid, is also directly responsible. Couple of other articles that I had here. Apparently, after the nuclear scientist was assassinated, there's an article here saying that over 1,000 students quickly changed to nuclear physics and to engineering. That's in Iran. They did that on purpose, basically as a show that they do not agree with what the outside forces are doing. I mean, you just have to imagine what it'd be like if American scientist of any type were murdered on the streets by some other foreign power. I mean, we would be obliterating people tomorrow with a nuclear weapon. But we're doing that to Iran every day, and we're trying to build the case to go to war against them. It's a lot of fun, ladies and gentlemen. It's the War of the Week. Other articles to look at here in this same category. You have an article from Foreign Policy Journal, interestingly enough, talking about a false flag incident where Mossad agents are actually using American passports to do a lot of their covert work, especially in Iran, trying to get some sort of covert war going. So pretty bad stuff. In the Financial Times, the paper of record for the business world, there's a huge article which ran called The Use of Force Tops Agenda on Iran. I have linked to that, so you can read that if you would like. A couple of other things is we had apparently U.S. Coast Guard ships are stationed off of the coast of Iran, and every time there's any sort of ship that comes near those Coast Guard ships, the news media goes into a frenzy, and the media tried to build up the case that perhaps they're trying to bomb us. I mean, if anyone is knowledgeable of history, we know that this is the Tonkin Gulf incident all over again. And for those of you who are on the Wikipedias today, if it's not blacked out, look up Tonkin Gulf incident. It's what started the entire Vietnam War. It was all fake. It was not real. And it all stemmed from the United States stationing battleships and all types of ships with guns right off the coast of Vietnam and faking some sort of attack, and that drew us into war. So be careful with that. We'll be looking for that here on Liberty in Exile and much more. And I have to play an important clip here by someone who is, as we've stated on this program, anti-empire and really the only Republican presidential candidate who deserves your vote. This is Ron Paul, who is on Fox News talking with the always attractive Megyn Kelly about this nuclear scientist, what the U.S. should be doing, should not be doing, and what the warmongers actually want. So listen to this interview.
Now there is a real question about the position we're in, because there have been three guys assassinated over there. A fourth was attempted, and Iran is vowing to retaliate. They blame Israel, but they also blame us. Our Secretary of State says we had nothing to do with it. Israel's saying the same. Should we be doing this if it is us? And what should we do if Iran retaliates?
Well, obviously, if we're doing it, we shouldn't be doing it. But this is an act of terrorism, and we should empathize with them. They are victims of terrorism, and we have condemned all terrorism. Obviously, the Iranian government wouldn't be killing their own scientists. So, yeah, we should have great empathy for them. And if we haven't done it, we should prove to them or give them all the reassurance that we have not done it. And to the answer to your questions, if we are doing it and participate, we ought to quit. That wouldn't make any sense. Participating in violent acts, which would be equivalent to terrorism, at the same time, that's all we talk about is going around the world on a global war on terrorism, so there'd be no consistency there.
Well, now we may have a problem on our hands, because if it, you know, our Secretary of State says it wasn't us, but Iran seems to believe it was us, and now they're vowing to retaliate, perhaps against Israel, perhaps against us. What do we do if they assassinate an American in response?
Well, It's a real mess. We should have done a lot less a lot sooner. Everybody knows we have CIA agents maneuvering in Iran. We had a drone shot down, maybe two drones shot down over Iran. We're getting ready to put very punishing sanctions on them and disrupting the oil market. And, you know, they're a very weak nation. They're responding in a natural way, but they don't want trouble because they know they can be annihilated in about 40 minutes, you know, either by Israel or the United States. This idea that they're looking for a fight, I think that is all a concoction of the West to prepare the people for a war that's likely to come when we have a policy like this. I think it makes the perfect argument for my non-interventionist foreign policy that we shouldn't be engaged in stirring up trouble. And all these things that we do to try to get rid of the regime in Iran right now actually plays into their hands, because once we interfere interfere or put on sanctions. This brings the Iranian people together. They're having an election in a few months, and Ahmadinejad is not that strong politically. But when we interfere as an outsider, those dissidents who are struggling to get control of their country and their government and have a more sensible government, we have to drive them into the arms of the government, just as we were brought together after 9/11. We were no dissenters. We all came together. There were no Republicans or Democrats. So we have to try to understand how our policies actually do the opposite of what we intend them to do.
We have an impression in this country that they do want trouble, though, because of threats like the one they made to shut down the Strait of Hormuz, through which 1/6 of the world's oil supply flows. If they did that, if you were the president, Congressman, and they shut down the strait, what would you do?
Well, I would tell them I'm not going to put sanctions on them. That's their response. They're not going to close down the Straits of Hormuz. That would be, self-destructive. But they have to say something to try to make us think differently about putting devastating sanctions that's going to really hurt their people, and it's going to hurt the economy. It's going to hurt their Eastern Europe are going to suffer. That's why there's hesitation right now about this. But to say that because they are retaliating with a so-called threat is the problem, I say that is the consequence of the problem, and we should think more broadly than that. And I think we shouldn't stir that up to the point that anybody thinks they really want to close down the Straits of Hormuz or they can. I think that's way out of proportion to what they're able to do. They're trying to get attention on how the world's trying to punish them right now, and we're not permitting the dissidents who would like to overthrow their current government to do it, because they're unifying all those people because there's too many foreigners trying to interfere with their internal affairs.
And that was our Congressman Ron Paul speaking on Fox News about the assassination of the Iranian nuclear scientists and just how far the warmongers are willing to go to provoke yet another conflict for the American people. Interesting interview as always, and they're a couple of other clips that I'm going to be playing throughout the show. I have a few from Dr. Paul. Of course, he is running for president, and there's a local primary going on this week in South Carolina. It'll be on Saturday. So any of you listening out there, whether it be on the Liberty Radio Network, the No Agenda Stream, or general podcasting, if my voice is reaching your ears somehow and you are able to vote in this primary, I do encourage you to go out, vote for the only anti-war, anti-empire, and anti-drug war candidate out there. That's even better than Obama in all cases, so please do that. And before I play the other clips, I should insert a more of a personal note. I did get to go see the doctor in Rock Hill, South Carolina. He held a little town hall for about an hour, so I went down there, listened to the speech, and I must say that after years of listening to clips, of clicking on the YouTubes, it was very exhilarating to actually hear the doctor speak, see him speak, see all the people who are of like mind, who are interested in the message of liberty and freedom, see them all around in the same place. For me, it was a mind changer, I have to say that. And as well as the ongoing debates in South Carolina and other clips, there is actually a little clip that I'll be playing here in just 1 second about Ron Paul getting booed for apparently espousing the Judeo-Christian belief that, you know, there is a golden rule and that we should treat others as we would like to be treated, except he extended it to foreign policy, which for some reason makes the evangelical Christians in South Carolina boo him. But I was speaking to a friend of mine, Fergus, about the debate in general, and we were exchanging messages, and he said he felt very disillusioned with the American people after that. And I have to say that I have to agree with him on that. I mean, if you listen to the people booing him, I mean, these are the people who are supposed to be for Jesus. I mean, I'm not much of a fan of religion myself, but the people who are supposed to carry on this tradition of Jesus Christ are booing the man who is saying that we should extend his message into foreign affairs. I mean, it is mind-blowing. So listen to this clip. This is from the debate the other night on the Fox News.
My point is if another country does to us what we do others, we're not going to like it very much. So I would say that maybe we ought to consider a golden rule in foreign policy. Don't do to other nations what we don't want to have them do to us. So we endlessly bomb these countries, and then we wonder why they get upset with us. And yet, it continues on and on. I mean, this idea that we can't debate foreign policy, then all we have to do is start another war? I mean, it's warmongering. They're building up for another war against Iran, and people can't wait to get in another war. This country doesn't need another war. We need to quit the ones we're in. We need to save the money and bring our troops home.
And this is the kind of stuff that upsets the people who do not like Ron Paul, the people who would like to sustain a huge American empire, the people who would like to continue to see deaths of millions of brown people in the Middle East and hundreds of thousands of American troops. People like, for example, Bill Kristol, editor of the Weekly Standard, who is a leading neoconservative in the movement to occupy the earth and, quote, make it safe for democracy. He went on C-SPAN the other day and actually said that the GOP should just kick out Ron Paul, that his message is not welcome, and that though he espouses every correct view on economic policy, monetary policy, because he believes that the U.S. is an empire, he should be kicked out of the grand old party.
One final thing about Ron Paul, since everyone seems so interested in him, and I guess we have to go here in a minute. I'm not going to apologize at all. For a lot of people, when they criticize Ron Paul, have to preface their criticism by saying, he's a good guy, and it brings a lot to the debate. I actually don't buy that. I don't think he's a particularly good guy. I think he'd be better for the Republican Party, and I'll say this, I've thought about this some. I think it would be better for the Republican Party if he left the Republican Party. A lot of Republicans are spending a lot of time, how do we keep Ron Paul in the tent? How do we make sure he doesn't go third party?
Including his other opponents?
Yes, and his opponents being very nice to him on the stage. Republicans spent a lot of time keeping Pat Buchanan in the tent in 92 and 96. He gave a primetime speech in the 92 convention. That didn't really help President Bush's reelection run. He did well in the 96 primaries. I guess he supported Bob Dole. I don't think Bob Dole won. He left the party in 99, and a lot of people, and I was one of them, said goodbye and good riddance. You're not in the mainstream of the Republican Party. Go run as a Reform Party candidate, as an independent candidate. He did in 2000. He didn't get many votes, and actually George W. Bush, I think, was helped. The Republican Party was helped to be free of Buchanan's extreme isolationism, protectionism, anti-Israel views, and the like. Ron Paul's a little different from Pat Buchanan, but he's no better, in my view. And I actually think the Republican Party would be benefited in the long run, but even in the short run.
Now, this guy is just a total jerk. I mean, it is because of this guy that we are bogged down in all of these countries. I mean, this guy has, obviously, blood on his hands. He has no right to speak. He has no legitimacy. He does not belong on any of these programs. He should not be getting any money from anybody. I mean, this guy is just whatever you envision a jerk or a complete, just complete idiot to be. He is that person. That is Bill Kristol there on the C-SPAN. And I have some other clips that also are very important. You had, at the debate once more, you did have Ron Paul speaking about the National Defense Authorization Act. I'll be playing another clip from that later. This was the part where the military would be allowed to indefinitely detain any American citizen for any reason as long as somehow they create some sort of link to associated forces who might be hostile against the United States. And asking all the other candidates, they all seem very happy to have this little piece of legislation. They seemed as if they were jealous that they didn't get to sign it themselves. So once Ron Paul got the microphone, he got to espouse a little bit of truth to these people so he could show them what freedom was all about.
I think we're going in the wrong direction for the protections of our liberties here at home. They're under deep threat. The Patriot Act has eliminated the Fourth Amendment. We now have a policy of preemptive war. You don't have to declare war, and you don't even have to have an enemy. We can start the wars. That's what preemptive war is all about. Now, with the Military Appropriation Defense Act, this is major. This says that the military can arrest an American citizen for under suspicion, and he can be held indefinitely without habeas corpus and denied a lawyer indefinitely, even in a prison here. Let me give you one statistic. You're worrying about all these, where we're going to try people. Where are they going to do? We have to do it secretly because our rule of law is so flawed. We have arrested 362 people related to Al-Qaeda top operation. 260 of them are in prison. They've been tried and convicted. So don't give up on our American judicial system so easily, I beg of you.
Now, again, there's nothing that you can disagree with in what Congressman Ron Paul is saying, and of course no other presidential candidate is even speaking anything close to that, so you have to applaud him once more. And that's why it's always fun to watch these cable news programs who try to give you the fair and balanced view, or they try to, you know, whatever their slogans are, your opinion, you decide, whatever it may be, doesn't matter. But they always have these little, you know, interactive graphics of, you know, Twitter games of what people were saying. And there was an interesting exchange between one of the anchors who was covering it and the other one who was doing the actual analysis. And the woman actually stops him and is like, look, Ron Paul did the best. You have to admit it. And if you see this graph, he's off the chart of people who are reacting. And he tries to downplay it. So I figured I'd play this clip. It's actually quite amusing. You can also find it on libertyinexile.com. Roll it.
To be dodging every question in the eyes of people who are tweeting in. Rick Santorum above the line on the economy. The same with Rick Perry. Ron Paul way above the line. Ron Paul always tends to do well in these Twitter surveys. They are not scientific. They are people voting for their favorite candidate. Sometimes and other times they are a good measure of what's being said. Let's move it ahead now to foreign policy and take a look here. Newt Gingrich did very, very well on foreign policy. Mitt Romney, not as far below the line as he was in some of the other topics. Rick Santorum, Rick Perry, and Ron Paul also all did well on foreign policy. Let's take it another. Go ahead.
John, can I stop you right there? Because I'm getting real-time feedback. Ron Paul didn't just do well, he did the best from that chart. No, I just want to be fair. I want to point it out because people are watching for it.
He did very, very well tonight. And, I mean, his bars are bigger than everyone else's. So we report, you decide.
Oh, yeah, his bars are bigger than everybody else's. We love the big bars. He's got those big old bars. Ron Paul doing the thing. I mean, he's always very popular. Got them big old bars. So well, the bar love affair happens, and she had to point it out on social media. Ron Paul is king and winning out. So good job with there. And I think that was a nice little segment that we ended up there. It's time to transition from that and look at what's going on, ladies and gentlemen, in the police state. But first, let us turn to our donations segment. Now, if you've been listening to the show a while, you know that this is alternative media, and we do bring it to you free of charge, but we do appreciate any contribution you can give to the program. If you are interested, please go to donate.freeyael.com. That is donate.freeyael.com. Your contribution and donation to the program keeps alternative media alive and keeps the dream of eradicating the rulers and the Leviathan above us. So let us continue with here with the program. Everything else you can find on Liberty in Exile, as always, and it is time, as I mentioned before, for the Police State segment.
The policeman isn't there to create disorder. The policeman is there to preserve disorder.
Now, I normally would play the drone jingle that we have, but not too many drone stuff in the news. There was the report, you know, from ABC News saying that Iran will be sending back the drone that they had. I want back my drone. Iran will be sending it back to the U.S., but it'll actually be a miniature version, so it'll be a nice little joke. There's actually also the local police department in Denver will be getting their own little drone, so I think that's always very interesting. But as far as police state news, there's something very disturbing that I was able to catch, and that is the beating of a 66-year-old man by a police officer. And the police officer is written up, of course, because he destroyed the tape. That's the only reason, not beating the crap out of a 66-year-old man. You can go to the website, libertyinexile.com, watch the video. It's quite amazing. Just seeing how robust and militarized our police have come. I mean, these are probably the only slave masters that exist in our society, and they do treat us like slaves. They treat us like we are nothing but subservient citizens, and we should listen to every word they say. We are nothing but subjects in their monarchy. But this is not true. We do live in a republic, and thankfully we do have the media to expose when this stuff does happen, especially the alternative press. So listen to this report. This is out in Florida.
And new at 6 from Brevard County. Tonight, only Eyewitness News has obtained dash cam video of a violent police beating in Melbourne. As Channel 9's Mary Wynn reports, in this video, you can see an officer hitting and kicking a 66-year-old man with dementia for no apparent reason. We want to warn you, the video is graphic.
This is dash cam video of Melbourne police officer Derek Middendorf giving 66-year-old Albert Flowers a front kick to his stomach. Then he punched the man repeatedly while he was on the ground. In a report, the officer said Flowers walked towards him in an aggressive manner at a fast pace, and he couldn't tell if the 66-year-old had a knife in his hands. Flowers' nephew, Garrick, yelled at the officer to stop and told him his uncle had dementia.
He's 66 years old. He had a triple bypass. I'm just concerned about my uncle. I'm thinking he's killing him.
Flowers owns a lawn care business, and an employee called the cops because he said Flowers pulled a knife on him during a fight about money. When police arrived, the family said Flowers never pulled a knife and that the issue had been resolved.
The money matters was taken care of. But I mean, you know, if he forgot or whatever, that's what I was there for.
The family said Middendorf was choking Flowers when another officer came over and tased him in the face. Flowers ended up in the hospital for close to a month. No one may have ever seen this video. The officer actually turned off his video and audio equipment before the beating, but the department was able to extract the video from the hard drive, but not the audio. The only disciplinary record the officer received for this incident was a written reprimand for turning off that recording equipment. Flowers was charged with battery on a law enforcement officer.
Which is ridiculous. Clearly from the video, there was no assault on a law enforcement officer. We have demanded a speedy trial, and we want to get this case in front of a jury. We want a jury to see this video.
Reporting in Melbourne, Mary Wynn, Channel 9 Eyewitness News.
The police chief said he could not comment on the allegations of excessive force because he hadn't yet seen the complaint. It was filed today. We just got a copy of Officer Middendorf's personnel file, and we're going through that right now. We'll let you know what we find tonight on Eyewitness News at 10 and 11.
Now, it just breaks your heart to see this stuff again. I mean, the guy was tased, his hands behind his back. He's a 66-year-old man with dementia, very sick. But police are there to show us that they rule over us. We are their slaves. Apparently, and the trend is not just there, the trend is actually in the way that they use electronic equipment. Here's a little clip that I have about police are now collecting all of your license plate data and analyzing it and trying to find wherever you may be by your location, by your license plate. It is an amazing time. Let us continue the police state.
Cricket balance that is now the focus of a California Watch investigation. ABC 7's Capitol correspondent Annette Miranda is live in Sacramento tonight with the story. Annette.
Well, as seen in at least one crime-fighting tool, privacy experts say laws have not caught up with technology. More and more law enforcement agencies and even private security firms are mounting high-tech cameras atop their vehicles, scanning license plates for stolen cars. It has become a valuable tool. For Arden Fair Mall near the state capitol, a stolen car means someone is up to no good in 80% of the cases. Its first hit led to an arrest.
And we tracked him into one of the stores here. When he was arrested, they patted him down, and inside of his pants, he had several pairs of shoes that he shoplifted while he was inside the mall.
Police officers and deputies have had similar success out on the streets. But a California Watch investigation raises questions over how else the information gathered by this 21st century tool is being used. It found a Livermore-based company called Vigilant Video has compiled a database containing more than 500 million license plate scans from across the country.
Our digital fingerprints are everywhere.
And so, the California Public Interest Research Group works on privacy issues and says the database raises red flags because it shows where people have been and when, even the innocent ones.
whenever individuals' information is stored or compiled in one place, folks should be concerned, especially if they don't know about it.
The investigation also raises questions about police access to the database. They're not supposed to use information from license scanning to solve other crimes, but if it's now someone else's database, it's the perfect loophole to gain access. Vigilant Video declined our request for an interview, but the firm's president told California Watch, "We shouldn't hinder officers from doing their jobs." CHP hopes the privacy issue doesn't take away a very valuable and effective tool.
There's billions and billions of dollars that are lost on a yearly basis as far as number of vehicles stolen and the costs associated with those vehicles being stolen as far as the insurance. So that affects a lot of us.
CHP and Arden Fair Mall share license scans only with law enforcement. Meanwhile, critics had similar concerns with Fast Track because the company, too, had information on where customers had been once a toll was paid. But California lawmakers made it illegal 2 years ago to sell that data. Live in Sacramento, Nanette Miranda, ABC 7 News.
Now, once more, a despicable story of private companies and the police departments coming together to take away our freedoms. I mean, I got my car stolen a few years ago in the city of Montreal, and believe me, the police did not care whatsoever. They did absolutely no effort. I mean, I find it hard to believe that all of a sudden police want to go out there and help people find their cars. I mean, come on. The police are not there to try to help you find your property. They're there to take your property. That's what they do when they give you a ticket and you have to eventually pay money to the state, much like I've had to do in my own court case. I was actually ruled, for those of you who have listened before, I was pulled over in the state of Pennsylvania because apparently I had a quote-unquote leaky exhaust. I didn't know that police officers were mechanics, but I was given a ticket, even though I'm not registered nor licensed in the state of Pennsylvania, and told I needed to get my car inspected. I disobeyed the order, got my own little letter in the mail, had to go in court, did not go, and I was ruled guilty. And now I have to pay a $127 fine. I will be appealing it, of course, because I will not be bullied in this country. I will not allow myself to become subservient to that Leviathan, to that large power that is just there to usurp us of our hard-earned money. I'm not going to allow myself to become subservient to that. Also in police state news, as we transition away from that, there's a great article by Jonathan Turley. He's a civil rights attorney and a law professor that I follow. He wrote an article in the Washington Post called 10 Reasons the U.S. is No Longer Free. So please pay attention to that. I also have some articles linked up on libertyinexile.com about the North Carolina Task Force. As I've covered on this program before, the state of North Carolina, where I currently reside, had a sterilization program up until about the 1960s. So the state is having to give out money. Let's see what else is going on here. The New York governor wants mandatory DNA samples. USA schools are using their own police forces. We're having the police there. The New York City is trying to ban alcohol. And the NYPD is starting to whip out these portable body scanners to find concealed weapons. So the police state lives on, ladies and gentlemen. And with no further ado, we turn once more to our own United States of Europe. Yes, that's right. The proposal has come through. The European Commission put forth the legislation to consolidate a fiscal union that has never before been seen. It is a new day for the Soviet state of the EU-SSR, the fiscal union that has been promised, that has been given out so many times before, and finally it is coming to fruition as they all wished. Let us listen to the words of José Manuel Barroso, our European Commission President, as he lays out the facts.
Third, together we are insisting on language, acknowledging the need for European Union secondary legislation to implement key elements of the package agreed at the last European Council. And fourth, together, we are proposing a strong integration clause into the draft, which requires the necessary steps are taken to integrate the substance of the agreement into the legal framework of the Union. This agreement, if these rules are respected, can be an important tool in building a solid stability and growth agenda based on the Europe 2020 strategy and also on the roadmap presented by the Commission. Noting that from a legal point of view, this is an intergovernmental agreement, I hope that all Member States understand that politically, for its successful ratification and implementation, it needs the support of the European institutions, namely the European Commission, the European Central Bank, and of course, this European Parliament. I thank you for your attention.
Oh, there we go. That was EU Commission President José Manuel Barroso, and if you're like me, you did not understand one word he was saying. It was all completely crafted, obviously written beforehand by somebody else, somebody with a great legalese command of the English language. And in order to understand more broadly, we turn once more to our Liberty in Exile correspondent in the United States of Europe, Nigel Farage of the United Kingdom Independence Party. Nigel, please take it away and help us understand this convoluted plan. Barroso wants to have a fiscal union? What does this mean? Take it away, Nigel.
There's a very bad case of denial in this chamber this morning, a total refusal to accept that the euro project is failing. Greece is on the verge of a default. The bailout fund is creaking. The credibility of the European Central Bank itself now being called into question. It's all on the verge of going belly up. And yet, when the credit ratings agencies tell the truth, you try and pretend it's not happening. In fact, Mr. Brok and others were suggesting that it's all some dastardly plot by the Americans and the British and the Anglo-Saxon markets to bring down the euro. The agencies are nothing more than the canary in the mine. They're telling you the truth. And please listen to Standard & Poor when they say that austerity alone will not work. You are driving these countries into depression just to save your euro project. But I must acknowledge that you have lost absolutely nothing when it comes to your powers of deception. No, that's still very much on course. It was Nick Clegg that gave us the clue. Clegg, a man who I suspect is rather more popular here than he is back at home these days. Clegg was asked, should there be a referendum on the forthcoming treaty? He said, oh no, there's no need for that, because it's all going to be folded in to the existing treaties. And I thought, what the dickens is he talking about? Well, now I've learnt. Mr. Cohn-Bendit made it clear, it's to be the community method. It's to be legislation where you know you've got a majority in this Parliament and you know under qualified majority in the Council you can get everything through. And why are you doing it this way? Well, it's simple, isn't it? It's to avoid referendums. Because you know if a treaty was put to Ireland and many other countries, the answer would be no. The peoples of Europe do not want this sado-monetarist package. The peoples of Europe need, particularly in the case of the South, to get out of the euro, to have devaluation and a chance to re-establish themselves again. You are denying them that chance. And by pushing the community method, you are destroying democracy in Europe. I hope you're all very proud of yourselves.
As always, our great Liberty in Exile correspondent over there in the United States of Europe, that was Nigel Farage. You can watch the rest of his clips and all the articles we've mentioned on this program on libertyinexile.com. You are listening to the Liberty Radio Network and the No Agenda stream. Also, we have just a few more articles to look at when looking at the European Debt Union. Apparently, the new European nations have now started seizing the private pensions of their citizens. That's an article from Christian Science Monitor. You have the huge downgrade of all the big European countries this week by S&P. And that's what Nigel Farage was talking about, saying that a lot of people are alleging it's a conspiracy when really we all know it's just the failure of the EU. There's a report that came out about Italy's number one bank, apparently, who is the Mafia. Very interesting, as I just spent a good 2.5 weeks in Italy, had an amazing time, saw amazing places, and was able to see the corruption right up front. I mean, it's something that you read about, and maybe you can get a taste of it with, your eyes and reading about it, but actually seeing it, being a witness to it, it's very different. And I encourage anyone who wants to go over there, maybe rent some land, enjoy it. Enjoy the United States of Europe. The euro will be crashing very soon. It will be going down. In fact, if you would like to rent out an ancient Greek site, the Agence France-Presse is reporting that the ancient Greek sites are now having to be available for rent. The Greek government is trying everything it can to put off these austerity cuts that are being required. So a lot having to do with that. That was also very interesting. Before I play the last clip, I had a lot of stuff about the TSA. Apparently TSA agents stole $40,000 from luggage. There was also an article about the TSA admitting to harassing older ladies. Vanity Fair piece about airport security theater. So I always thought that was also very interesting. As far as legalize it news, talking about medical marijuana and regular marijuana, there's now a new study that came out saying that no long-term lung damage does come from marijuana use, and that actually they're easier on your lungs than cigarettes, those being joints. So I have those articles linked up on libertyinexile.com. Interesting as always. Now, the last clip I'm going to play here is from C-SPAN. Now, this is from a while ago. It's not from recent, but I played the clip earlier of Bill Kristol on the Weekly Standard, and the guy is a jerk. I think most people who are in the know have basically come to that understanding. He's someone who constantly clamors for more intervention abroad in whatever country. He's never seen a war that he does not like. And finally, on C-SPAN, a military wife called in and took her pretty little time to wipe the floor with Bill Kristol. This was amazing. Listen to this, and we'll come right back after this.
I'm here.
Yes, thank you. I've been listening to the discussion, and I'm a military wife. My husband's on his third tour to Iraq. And I just want to, if I could look Mr. Kristol and people like him from the American Enterprise Institute, and these people that are still pushing the war, I sleep 2 hours a night. I'm sure when your head hits your pillow, you know, you have the luxury of dreaming about, you know, anything that your mom will allow you to dream about. I'm waiting. I sleep with a phone under my pillow. My kids, if someone rings the doorbell, instead of doing what normal kids do, they freeze. And they're in elementary school. You all don't understand. We're military people, but we're people too. And the stress that we are under is tremendous. So I'll make a proposal before I have to leave the air. If this war is as important as you on the right and the hawks say it is, and if it is truly essential to our vital interests to do this, then institute the draft so we can have a break. We are at the breaking point. I just had to counsel a friend last night who has had a solid marriage for 14 years because their marriage has fallen apart because they're dual military and they haven't lived under the same roof together in 5 years. We're people. We can't keep up this stress level. Our children can't keep up this stress level. The spouses left behind can't keep up this stress level. And all you all keep saying, you just called my husband and all his troops a liar when you said it's mostly the insurgents attacking us. Because when I do get the luxury of speaking to my husband, what I'm hearing is the Iraqis let us through the gate, the security forces will let us through the gate, and 30 minutes after we pass through, they're laying down IEDs to blow us up when we come back through. They don't want us there. I understand you truly believe what you're saying, but it's not working. We can't want it for them more than they want it for themselves. Please bring my husband home. Please bring our brave troops home. We're tired. We're really tired.
Thank you. Thank you, caller. We understand.
Well, look, the Army, some of us have been arguing. Well, first of all, I really respect, obviously, the service of those who have been over there. We had dinner last night with close friends whose son just got back from Iraq, and it is tough duty, obviously, and now we're on second and third tours. Some of us argued for a long time before 9/11 and very vehemently after 9/11 that the Army and Marines were too small for the world we're living in, for the foreign policy obligations we are likely to have to impose on our military, for the warfighting obligations we're going to have to impose on the all-volunteer military, and finally we're increasing the size of the Army and the Marines, but we're paying a price for that in terms of longer tours and people going back a second and third times, and the strains on family life are obviously very real, and the, obviously it's a tough job over there. So I hope we do more to deal with that.
You go so far as her thought on the draft?
Well,
has never been anything better. That was Bill Kristol getting just wiped to the brim by a military wife on the telephone. Finally, that jerk got what he deserved. And if you're interested in any of the other links, please do go to libertyinexile.com. Please do contribute to the program, support us, keep alternative media alive. Go to donate.freeisle.com. We'll be back next week with more news, more analysis, and more look at the happenings of the week. For all of you out there across the United States of Europe, United States of America, and the rest of the world, au revoir et bonne chance à tous.
Visit libertyinexile.com.